from KQED.
Here's what's coming up on Forum in our second hour this morning. At 10 a.m., we talk with Carlos Watson, host of the new PBS special, The Contenders, which looks at how politicians who lost their races still made an impact on history. Then at 10:30, get your calendars ready. We'll get an updated guide on fall arts and culture events from KQED Arts Editor Chloe Veltman. To listen to past shows and join the discussion, visit kqed.org/forum. And for the latest updates on our programs and guests, find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. We're at KQED Forum. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. Carlos Watson created and hosted The Contenders, 16 for 16. It's a political documentary series airing on PBS this fall. He's CEO and co-founder of Ozzie Media, a Stanford lawyer and an entrepreneur, and the Silicon Valley-based former CNN and MSNBC anchor's eight-hour PBS series covers 50 years of presidential election history and focuses especially on those who ran for the nation's highest office and didn't make it.
What's wrong with my running for president of this country?
I almost resent, Vice President Bush, your patronizing attitude that you have to teach me about foreign policy.
I'm doing this because I love you.
Tomorrow night, my name will go on nomination for the presidency.
I will beat Al Gore like a drum.
I want my country back.
Well, where are they now? Those still living, the so-called also-rans. In fact, one of those also-rans, Ronald Reagan, of course, became president. But what effect did the candidates who didn't make it have on the office and the ongoing campaigns for the highest office in the land, including the one that's going on now? We welcome Carlos Watson to this opening segment of Forum Second Forum Hour. Good to see you.
Michael, really good to see you. Great to join you today.
You were at one time on this side of the microphone. You filled in for me. That was a number of years ago.
Guilty as charged. I was young and strong in those days. I was channeling my best Krasny.
You're still looking young and you're still obviously strong. And that you cover a lot of ground here, and I really hope we can do it justice because it's fascinating to see not only what happened to these people who ran for the office, but really the effect that those elections, those previous elections, not only had on ones that followed, but that have on now, although we've never quite seen an election like this, to be sure. But let's talk about it, these 16 stories, and let's get into them. These are people who ran, people who stayed in, people who dropped out.
Correct. A real mix as early as Barry Goldwater running in 64, the former Arizona senator who expected to be running against his good friend, JFK, and instead ran against LBJ, all the way up to Obama's re-election victory in 2012.
Well, you mentioned Goldwater, AUH2O. In your heart, you know he's right and all that, Arizona senator. The fact of the matter is not only did he think he was going to run against JFK, but we're sort of seeing something redux now in this campaign. A couple of things. First of all, Hillary Clinton was – she worked for the Goldwater
she
campaign.
She was. She, in her words and in the nomenclature of the time, was a Goldwater girl. And by the way, as was Howard Dean. Interesting.
Not a Goldwater girl.
not a Goldwater girl, but a Goldwater supporter. And both who ended up famously running for the Democratic nomination. But Goldwater was a really interesting candidate in that when he ran in 64, it obviously split the party, much like there was a Never Trump movement. There was a Never Goldwater movement, famously led by who? Mitt Romney's father.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, George Romney.
Also, who also ran for president, could never understand. My dad said, I'm a Romney guy, George Romney. Michigan was one state over from Ohio because my dad was a Democrat. But why he liked George Romney to this day remains a mystery. There's also a mystery about Goldwater's candidacy because from the start, he was really probably headed toward a loss to LBJ. But what really cemented that was that ad, that famous ad of a child picking the daisies with a nuclear mushroom cloud. I think we're going to see ads like that again with Trump, don't you?
In fact, just this morning I saw an ad running from the Clinton campaign that was fairly devastating, using Trump's own words, referencing, I'm going to blank the I'm going to bomb the blank out of them, and other sort of things. And so that whole question about temperament, I think, will be raised again, this time raised against Trump. And we'll see whether or not it has a dramatic effect on the campaign. Certainly, LBJ didn't just win that race in 64, but as you and I both know, it was a landslide.
So, so the sense of what you call early on in the series, the unbought and the unbossed, straight shooters, particularly Shirley Chisholm, whose voice we heard and who was someone who changed the whole nature of the presidency. I mean, to see at that time, only a few years after the Voting Rights Bill passed, not only an African-American, but African-American woman say, I'm running for the presidency of the United States. Extraordinary.
She was extraordinary. This former teacher, daughter of Caribbean immigrants, who, as you said, only a half dozen years after the passage of the Voting Rights Act, gets elected to Congress and decides to run and is hoping for support from the liberal coalition and the kind of coalition that ultimately coalesces not around her, but around George McGovern. And she finds some of that to be not only painful, but frankly, ironic. And there's quite a twist in the story there. But, Mike, I'll tell you, I showed some of these to a few friends. The most interesting comment across all 16 episodes, friend who saw the Shirley Chisholm episode, young woman, millennial, she said, Shirley Chisholm is the hero I never knew I had.
Wow.
I think people are going to love that first episode.
Let's hear Shirley Chisholm.
I am not the candidate of Black America, although I am Black and proud. I am not the candidate of the women's movement of this country, although I am a woman, and I'm equally proud of that. I am the candidate of the people of America.
That's announcing her candidacy. You didn't exactly hear raucous cheering, but she had her followers and she had people who led right to the voting booths.
One of the very famous ones who she propelled into politics is the Bay Area's own Barbara Lee, who met Congresswoman Chisholm when she was just beginning her campaign. Lee, by her own telling of the story, was a student at Mills College and a protester. And Chisholm said, you got to get on the inside, young lady, or as she used to call Barbara Lee, little girl, and not just rage on the outside.
Well, she did. She worked for Ron Dellums and then, you know, pretty much succeeded him. But I mentioned McCain, too, and he's running now. In fact, he's 80, just turned 80, and running again for re-election. In Arizona, there was a moment of McCain's where, and people continue to point it out, particularly by contrast, I suppose, to Trump, who's been playing odd kind of rhetoric with race and the like, where he said, you know, I'm not going to take that low road. I'm just not going to do it.
It was very interesting. He referenced two things in his life that led him to make that kind of decision in that moment. One was he frequently said, when I think about whatever I'm doing, in my mind, my dad and my grandfather are watching, and I've got to answer to them in many ways. And so that was a powerful piece of it. The other piece was he had been traumatized, really, in that 2000 primary against George W. Bush, felt like W. had done some inappropriate things to him, and so was on matters of race involving his adopted daughter, his Bangladeshi daughter, and so found himself hesitant to go down what he saw as the low road.
Speaking of W, when I mean, because we think about that race, of course, Ralph Nader played a key role. And, you know, when I interviewed him a number of times, he stuck by what he said essentially to you on camera. It's a political bigoted view to say that I didn't have the right to run or that I was a spoiler or any of that kind of stuff. But that 2000 election, a lot of people still blame Nader for the victory of Bush. But what you got him on camera to say, which I thought was fascinating, is he thought it was going to be an easy victory for Gore. He thought, you know, this guy from Texas can't string eight sentences together. How the heck is he going to beat Al Gore?
Correct. And, you know, what was that was one piece that grabbed me, and that kind of perspective that he had going into it, understanding that this was his second time around the block, that he had run in 96. But the other piece that really fascinated me and where he opened my eyes, even though intellectually I knew it, was the importance of debates. And Nader maintains to this day that if he had gotten on the debate stage, as Gary Johnson very much wants to, he maintains that he would have made a race of it, that it would have been 10, 15 points for him, and maybe even more, that he could have caught in some Bernie Sanders-like fire.
Well, I think we still got a couple of points for Gary Johnson and Wells, his running mate, to get on that ticket, to get on the stage in the debate. But it may be plausible and it may make a difference. And, you know, Ross Perot made an enormous difference.
Ross Perot certainly did. You know, what remains interesting to me is that this kind of pre-Trump Trump, meaning billionaire businessman, first-time candidate, runs for the highest office right away and has some measured success. We can't forget that for a period of time in 1992, Ross Perot was not just a candidate. He was ahead of the sitting president of the United States and the future president in William J. Clinton. And you and I remember that he dropped out, got back in, and still got one out of five American votes. And quite an interesting character in every way.
It's just like looking under the hood of a car doing this government stuff. Remember that? But also, Jesse Jackson was actually ahead at one point, too.
You know what? People forget that. And we always assume that history is what it is and it could have only unfolded the way. But you and I know that having run in 84, Jesse Jackson ran again in 1988. And this time around, midway through the primaries, so not just at the beginning, but midway through the primaries, he's ahead. He's leading Michael Dukakis and the rest of the field. And Newsweek and Time, which at the moment were very powerful, maybe the most powerful news weeklies at the time, both put Jesse Jackson on the cover. And you remember it says, "What does Jesse want?"
I do remember.
And Jackson is summoned to D.C. by the nervous white power brokers in the Democratic Party, led by Clark Clifford, former defense secretary, later mired in scandal. And as they gather around the table to kind of say, "Jesse, this is implausible and you need to stop playing games," Jesse looks at them and says, you know, in effect, your point of view is interesting, and I'm only here because I still believe that I can turn trash into energy, meaning them. And he makes a race out of it, doesn't manage to pull off Wisconsin or New York, where Ed Koch jumps in the middle, but certainly opens the eyes of, among others, a young Barack Obama.
Yeah, and opened his eyes. I saw him weeping when Barack Obama was in Chicago speaking as president of the United States. Jesse Jackson actually sobbing at the realization that an African-American had become president. Carlos Watson's here with us. He's CEO and co-founder of Ozzie Media. He mentioned Michael Dukakis and some fascinating things in the eight-part series. I won't give everything away here about the effect of Dukakis' family, for example, on his candidacy. And Ozzie Media, by the way, is a daily digital news and culture magazine. He's also creator and host of The Contenders, 16 for 16, political documentary series, which airs on PBS Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. beginning this fall. And I'd like to hear from you, our listeners, on this. When you think about those who made particularly impact on presidential campaigns or the so-called also-rans, which presidential campaign do you think left a mark long after the final votes were cast? And what was that mark? We put that out on Facebook to our listeners, and I'll put that out to you. And also invite you to join us with thoughts and questions you might have about those who were indeed at one time candidates for the highest office in the land and the leader of the free world. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. You can join us now, and we would like to hear from you. Some of you probably maybe even curious about what happened to Pat Buchanan or what happened to George McGovern, or although George McGovern's not covered in this, nor is Gene McCarthy. You had to be selective, I realize, but
it was tough leaving some of them out, Michael. I tell you, one of the ones I kind of wish we had gotten around to, obviously, was Bobby Kennedy, may he rest in peace. And but the other one who I was really wanted to dive into was James Earl Carter. You remember old Jimmy Carter from Plains,
Georgia?
He ran
to and ran to a defeat at one time. So you've got most of your bases covered here, though. And I'll tell you, one of the stories that's always affected me, because I thought he was a very bright guy. I've had a number of interviews with him through the years of those also-rans, is Gary Hart. And there were people – he was still writing books. He was on the show just a couple of years ago with a book he had written, and they were good books. They were really good food for thought. And by that time, it was my recognition, a lot of people didn't even know who he was. You know, it was like he had moved into obscurity.
You know, a lot of the millennials in our office said that and really were intrigued to discover him. Gary Hart had huge ideas. would have been a monumental president. You know, one of his ginormous, if I can use that word with an English professor, thoughts was we're going back to the mid-80s, and he was talking about striking early peace with the Russians, and he wanted to strike a deal with Gorbachev and invite Gorbachev, bring the Cold War to an end early, and invite Gorbachev to sit at his inauguration if he had won. I mean,
well, he said, if I become president, the first thing I'm going to do is stop the Cold War, right?
I mean, you and I know how huge that would have been. I mean, all credit to Papa Bush and others who later oversaw some of that, but that would have been significant. Gary Hart was quite interesting in the way he looked at the world, having been McGovern's campaign manager, having won an upset victory to enter the Senate in 74 and deciding to challenge the former vice president, Walter Mondale. And he said he looked at Mondale at 50% in the polls in 82, 83 and said, if he was vice president for 4 years and everyone knows him and he's only at 50, that means I've got a real shot here. And you remember he made a heck of a race out of it.
It was the monkey business that turned things around. I mean, you also look at these campaigns and then you realize how something can be turned around, how probably I mentioned Michael Dukakis before, you know, when he started answering that first question, or when
Bernie Shaw's question
about raping his wife were raped and murdered, what should be done, and Willie Horton came into the picture, and you had all of that. You begin to realize how these campaigns have just mushroomed and grown in some ways in very toxic ways, of course. I'm going to bring our listeners into this. And by the way, there are a number of ways you can join us if you have thoughts about previous candidates and the like. Our toll-free number again, 866-733-6786. This is only a half-hour segment. So if you have some thoughts about previous candidates for the office of presidency or some questions, you should join up now with us. You can also do that by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and clicking on this segment. And you can also, of course, tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Brian's our first caller here, and Brian, you want to ask about a candidate that I was very drawn to at the time, John Anderson, huh?
Yeah, it was my first vote for president. I was just wondering if there's something on him and your guest's opinion on him, and I'll take my answer on the air.
Okay. What do we know at this point, Carlos, about John Anderson, former congressman of Illinois who ran essentially a third-party candidacy?
In 1980, in that Ronald Reagan and James Earl Carter matchup. You know, we did look at independent candidates, and you remember Anderson.
We got Perot.
At a reasonable show. We ended up doing Perot and Nader, but Anderson was close. You know who else we looked at, a little forgotten candidate? Benjamin Fernandez.
Oh, yeah.
You remember him?
Yeah.
And so we almost took a good look at that. We could have looked at George Wallace. You remember Wallace?
Of course.
Running in 68, winning five states. And so Anderson was a meaningful contender and was taken reasonably seriously. You recall that Reagan, I believe, ended up winning that race roughly 51-41. So that left another 8 points on the table that was divided between Anderson and others. So lest we forget, there was a time in which third-party candidates, even pre-Perot, were taken reasonably seriously.
Well, never seriously enough to be major contenders, unfortunately, although they were perhaps contenders, to use that word as you do in your title here. You also talk about Sarah Palin as being at one time really considered a kind of viable candidate.
Well, you know what? She was. I mean, it's interesting. I sat down last week with Katie Couric, who, as you recall, did the pivotal interview that some said fundamentally shifted.
Sunk her and McCain both, probably.
Certainly sunk her and maybe sunk McCain as well. Palin was seen as mavericky. That speech at the Republican, when she first was announced, it was a surprise. Governor, Time magazine, you remember, had mentioned her as kind of one of the leading governors prior to her selection. So there was some reason behind that. But ultimately not well vetted and not ready for prime time. And despite
Except
on Saturday Night Live. Although I give her a lot of credit for going on with Tina Fey. You know what Katie Couric said? Katie Couric said the first time she saw Sarah Palin's face, she said, this was even before, she said, she looks like Tina Fey.
Let me bring another caller on here, and that's Nathan. Nathan, you're on.
Thank you. I was wondering if I remember correctly that Shirley Chisholm was found guilty of fraud while she was in Congress. Is that correct?
You know, I have to tell you, Nathan, I don't remember that. I don't remember that that was the case. And so
I think there were charges brought. I don't know if she was found guilty, though. We're going to have to do a little homework on that.
We will.
And if anybody remembers, feel free to let us know. Actually, Mike writes, Shirley Chisholm's predecessor as a female candidate for a major party nomination was, of course, Goldwater challenger Margaret Chase Smith. Did her candidacy make the cut?
She did not. What a terrific memory. The longtime senator, we did not end up choosing her. But, you know, what everyone's pointing to, and I think the real opportunity here, is we think there's a second run of this. This is just the first volume, I hope. And we may reach back. You talked about interesting third-party candidates. Of course, we could go back to that. We could go back to that 1912 race that included not only Woodrow Wilson and William Howard Taft, but old Teddy Roosevelt, who got back into that race, and from a Republican point of view, may have thrown things off a little bit.
And you know, when you bring Romney into the picture, and you're kidding me about having filled in this chair a number of years ago when you were young and so forth. But, you know, Romney still has a kind of youthful vigor to him. I mean, I think that was what you were trying to impress. And a lot of people think, boy, does Romney look good now, you know, especially when those naysayers about Trump.
Without a doubt. So I sat down with Governor Romney, who's now 69. Michael, if someone had told you that he was in his mid-50s, you would have believed it. Funny, lively, thoughtful about things. It was interesting, though. I always have believed that Hurricane Sandy had a greater impact in that race than many of us believe. Now, President Obama's team, including his campaign manager, Jim Messina, scoffs at that, tells me, give me a break. We were going to win no matter what. We saw the early returns. We knew where the numbers were. And so that wasn't going to happen.
No, but it was that private room in Florida, really, that turned things, wasn't it?
I think there's no doubt that that took the win from his sails. But what does it say about America that despite having something that devastating, that Romney was able to get back in it and effectively come close to tying things with that first debate? You remember that first debate against President Obama, and Romney's back in it to win it. Now, that second debate, he is still frustrated this day with Candy Crowley's participation in it and his view on the impact there. But, you know, Romney ultimately lost by four and a half points. President had 51-52. Romney, of course, had an ironic 47%.
You know, when I said we've never seen anything like this campaign, this president campaign, for Donald Trump, who is the nominee for the Republican Party, to call Romney a loser and to call John McCain a loser for different reasons, you know, was absolutely unprecedented. Almost had to suspend your disbelief that you were hearing this from a candidate of that same party.
Unprecedented in this era, but, you know, you and I could go back. You're too young to remember, but back to the 1800s, you know, some of those presidential races, including against Grover Cleveland, were fairly ferocious. Mama,
where's your pa? Gone to the White House. Ha, ha, ha.
There you go. There you go. Speaking of his child born out of wedlock, which at the time was quite the scandal.
Carlos, good to have you on. Congratulations on this eight-part series, which begins on PBS Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. in the fall. And good luck with it. Appreciate your being here.
Michael, always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And we're going to find out, actually, we're going to talk with Chloe Veltman all about what's coming up in the fall in addition to this eight-part documentary. Take a look at the culture and art scene. Stay tuned for that. We're going to hip you, as we used to say, on what's going on and what you can take advantage of. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.